Bienvenidas. I am your host to Courageous Mujer Podcast. My name is Gladys Godinez, and I am here to support, embrace, and celebrate Latinas in the heartland. It is time to share our stories, break some barriers, and glass ceilings while we're at it. Like the song says, let's get loud. Bienvenidas a Courageous Mujer Podcast. I am so excited to share the story of Olga Guevara today. Olga comes out of South Sioux. South Sioux represent a Courageous Mujer Podcast. Bienvenida, Olga. Thank you so much for joining me.
Muchísimas gracias. Thank you so much for the invite. And I'm super excited. Quite frankly, I was wishing you would invite me. So thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so grateful for you being here. You know, we have known each other through this past year, but I know my little sister Rose has worked with you before. So I'm excited to dig in and get to know Olga. You have so much to share. You have been at the front lines, you know, this past year with Meatpacking. Obviously, that's what we've shared recently. And with Health Equity, we're both working together with Health Equity Task Force out of Nebraska or the state of Nebraska. So I'm ready to dig in, but primero, let's start light. You know, let's start inspiring, or let's start figuring out what's going on. What makes you happy, Olga? So what's something exciting that has been happening in your life or that's happening here in the near future?
I guess there's a lot of things happening right now, right? We're coming out of this pandemic. We're going into the summer months. We're actually here now. And so That's really exciting. I got to get out of the basement because I was working for an entire year, more than a year, in my basement. And so we're back in the office. We just recently moved to a new office. And so we're really excited. And I guess I'm just happy to see everyone getting back to normal.
That is exciting. You're out of your basement. Y yo todavía aquí estoy. I haven't moved out yet.
You'll be out soon.
I know, but I do get upstairs sometimes and I, you know, stand, you know, sit myself in front of the window to get some sunlight because this basement is really something.
It's so much needed. Yes. 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 Definitely.
Well, you mentioned just real quick, just to clarify, you moving to the office. Tell me, where are you at? Who are you? What office? What are you talking about?
We were able to get a grant that allowed us to go into a bigger space, to lease a bigger space. We're still in South Sioux City. This is, of course, with Unity in Action. And we're very excited because we've never had a big enough space where we could host workshops and classes. And as you know, with our work, we do a lot of education. And so in the past, we had to rent facilities, right? We had to go and reserve a library space, conference room. We would go to the local college and reserve spots there so we could have our classes and workshops. And so having a space of our own is so exciting. It's so refreshing. And like I said, coming out of this pandemic and having this open space and light space, because there's a lot of windows, it really gets us excited.
That is super exciting. I'm so happy to hear more about Unity in Action and what you all have been up to up in the northeast of Nebraska. So we'll dig in a little later. Yes. Well, before we get started formally, let's get down to your ethnic identity and your pronouns, por favor.
Soy Mexico-Americana, Mexican-American. My pronouns are she, her, y ella.
All right. Thank you so much. And, you know, I had a conversation recently with one of my really good friends, and we were just thinking, hey, what would be so cool to ask during these conversations, just to kind of make it personable and really trying to reach our younger populations? You know, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing it for, right? Trying to reach our younger Latinas that may feel alone out in rural Nebraska or in Omaha and Lincoln. They're tuning in también, which is really exciting. I want to talk about our first jobs. You know, like, it's just funny to me because I remember working at Wendy's for like 2 weeks and then I quit. So can you share with me your first job?
Absolutely. I had to think about that. And so I used to be a cashier at Shopko, the stores are no longer here. They went bankrupt. And so I think I was 16 when I started there, and I was there for a long time. I was really excited to get that job because for a long time I couldn't work. Well, I was young too, right? But I was super excited to, you know, make some money. In my mind, I wanted to help the family out, as most immigrant families. And so I started as a cashier chef when I was there for 8 months. I was there for a long time.
Yes. Well, for a teenager, right?
For a teenager, right.
That is a long time. Yeah. And I'll just share a little bit. So I know I said I went to Wendy's for like 2 weeks and then I quit, but I got a job offer at Walmart. So, you know, it's not, I looked at my options and I went for the long-term option. And then at Wendy's, you know,
long-term.
Yes, definitely thinking long-term. And with Wendy's, it was interesting because I don't know. I just know fast food is hard work. And the first thing that they put me on is the bun burner, you know, and they're like, Gladys, once you're done with the bun burner, you're going to move to fries, you know, and then after fries, you're going to move to hamburgers. And then after hamburgers, maybe you'll be cashier. And I'm just like, whoa, that's that's me leveling up.
Going down the production line.
I know, yeah. So kudos to all the fast food workers, because I know that can't be easy, you know. It's not easy and it's fast food work. And I appreciate everybody working those hard shifts. But it was interesting me hearing that and me saying, okay, no, I'll go to the shoe department at Walmart, you know, like after 2 weeks of working at Wendy's. So it was very interesting.
Yes. And I have to tell you that after Shopko, I went to Burger King. I wanted more hours. I wanted more money. So then I upgraded in my mind.
Yes. Interesting. Not like we so, just switched places, basically.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Well, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about you, Olga. I know a little bit about a little bit, I feel. There's so much to share in regards to our story. So where do you want to start in regards to your story?
Well, we can start from the beginning. I want to start with our immigration story because I feel that it's so much of our stories is what make up our identity as Latina women. And whether you're born in the States or you're born somewhere else, we all have an immigration story, right? And so I can go ahead and start there.
Yeah, let's dig in.
And so I am the product of the last immigration reform, which happened in 1986. This immigration reform has been the most significant bipartisan immigration reform that the country has seen. It's been 35 years since it was signed into law. And the reason why I mention this is because we haven't seen anything like it since then. Since 1986. And so my family and I were the benefits of that policy, and is what changed our lives. We weren't able to travel to see our family back in Mexico for many, many years because we didn't have status. And so I think that going through those moments in life where, you know, you're undocumented, right? You don't have a social security number. You don't have status. You don't have an identity. And that's the way I would think of it, you know, in my young mind is, you know, what are we doing here? Who am I? That question, I think has persisted throughout my life, basically. And so it has played a big role in it has shaped me in who I am today as an individual and as a professional. And so I was born in Guadalajara, Mexico, and my family came to the U.S. when I was 4 years old. We settled in the northern part of California. My parents were farm workers for many, many years. And then eventually they traded the fields for me packing in South Dakota. We were in South Dakota for a couple months, and then we moved to Iowa, and we've been in Iowa ever since then. But because we live in a tri-state area, Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota, you know, a lot of our time was spent in South Sioux City, which is currently where I work.
Oh my goodness, Olga. It's so interesting because I call it living in the shadows or living in limbo. Mm-hmm. You know, when we are undocumented or when we live in a place where we don't know where we fit, you know, and it's so interesting living in rural Nebraska or just a rural place where you don't have a lot of people that can relate, or if they can relate, we're all staying quiet. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's such a private piece of our identity, the coming out as undocumented, documented, mm-hmm. or any type of status other than citizen is really hard for us, you know. And I can relate. I know that my attorney would tell me, stop talking about your past history on immigration. So I am going to stop to my sister. I'm going to be quiet, but I am going to say that I can relate. And mm-hmm. I can see, I understand that limbo. I understand those shadows. And it's not an easy place, you know, to be at. So I would love to dig in a bit further if you're willing to share, you know, when did you find out, you know, because you're 4 years old, but you didn't know, you know, like you came to the States, you're here. But there's some things that you can't get until you are of status or you get some sort of status.
I don't know if I can answer exactly when I knew I was undocumented. There was just certain things that didn't make sense. So I was too young to understand, but I cannot say of a particular event or moment in life where it was kind of like an aha moment that didn't happen for me. It was just that we couldn't travel to Mexico. My parents were kind of stuck in the same type of jobs. And we, quite frankly, we struggled right through most of our young life. And so I think I paid more attention to the fact that I didn't speak very well English, and I couldn't understand my friends at times. The instructors, the teachers would give me more attention because I was in ESL. And so I think that's when I realized, I think it was in third grade when I realized, okay, something's wrong. Something's wrong with me. And there, I felt like I was getting a special attention, but it wasn't good. It wasn't good because I was being singled out. And I mean, they were trying to help me, but it was not a good feeling as a child.
Right, right. And growing up, you know, now we know there was nothing wrong with little Olga, you know, and it's just, it's interesting just reflecting on those moments. I know for sure for me, when I was 15, we went to, I apologize to Rose already, but when I was 15, we were at an immigration attorney's office. And, you know, we were asking like a million questions as to, okay, so how do we maintain status? Or obtain status. And he kept saying, well, all you got to do is get married to a citizen. All you got to do is get married to a citizen, to a 15-year-old. You know, like I'm 15. What do you mean? Why are you trying to marry me off?
I have to get married now? Right.
And that would be the answer to a ginormous question within my family. And it's so huge, you know, that obtaining status within a family of mixed status or just undocumented. And then having that answer put on you and saying, yeah, all you have to do is get married, Gladys. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. And it's so much that you have to carry with that, you know, and I can unpack more, but I'm here to learn about Olga, not to unpack too much on me, but just sharing some stories in regards to when we learn or when we understand the impact that, hey, we're not here legally, quote unquote.
Right. And it kind of going back to your comment earlier that it's not an easy topic to talk about. You're right. I mean, I think this is like the first, one of the first few interviews or conversations that I've had with people that I trust and so openly about my story. And so it's taken me a long time to openly talk about this and be comfortable and be okay with talking about this. But I do think that it's such a big part of my identity. And if you really want to be true to ourselves and relatable to other people, we have to share our story, right? And so I've learned to embrace my story. I'm no longer embarrassed, because I was embarrassed at one time, just because of everything that it meant to be undocumented. And it's such a shameful thing that, you know, that the social construct around it is shameful, right? And so and by telling my story, I want to own my story. I want to own this, my family story, and I want to be proud of it. And I am proud of it, because there's nothing to be ashamed of, right? We didn't take anything from anyone, and I think we've earned everything that we have. And so I'm really proud of that.
Yes. And, you know, with Courageous Mujer, one of the, a lot of the things is belonging and embracing and really owning who we are and understanding that we're not alone. And I think, you know, again, you and I are not alone. We're relating right now in regards to our own undocumented stories. So I'm very happy we're able to dig into that. Well, let's talk a little bit about your youth and growing up. I know we talked about this immigrant piece, but so you're in South Dakota, South Sioux. Tell me about your high school experience, and then, you know, planning to go to college, not going to college. What happened there?
Okay. So I went to a high school in Sioux City. I did, you know, once we moved to Sioux City, Iowa, I did middle school and high school there. I had a lot of friends in South Sioux because there was a small Hispanic community that was beginning to grow. And it was really concentrated in South Sioux. So a lot of our close friends and community lived in Nebraska. And so I didn't have any plans to go to college, quite frankly, because my whole mission in life was to work and make money, right? And so we came to this country to in pursuit of a better life, like everybody else. My story is not unique, but I really was just focused on making money and helping my parents out, because that's what immigrant families do, right? We help each other. And so as soon as I graduated high school, that was such a big accomplishment for me. And it was like my only goal in life, right? I want a high school diploma. And so I did it. And I got my high school diploma. And there was these rare occasions where I would think, you know, it would be nice if I could go to college. But no. You know, that's not for me. It'll be hard. You know, you don't have the money. How will you do it? It's just too complicated. That's not for you. And so I would talk myself out of it. And I did that for so many years. And then I went on to getting married, having a family, you know, and just worked at different jobs. And it finally got to me, you know, when I had my kids and I said, you know, am I going to do this for the rest of my life? Am I going to, the work that I did, I've done meat packing, I've done office work, I've done fast food, I've been a cashier, I've been a waitress. And I was tired of working so hard, because a lot of the times those are physical, very physical jobs, and you don't have any energy at the end of the day. You're mentally drained. And a lot of the times you feel like a machine. You feel like a robot doing this same repetitious work over and over and over. And to some degree, that feels numbing and dehumanizing. And so I started talking to myself and analyzing, you know, our entire life journey, and thinking about the story that my dad used to repeat all the time, you know, how we got here and his struggles. And, you know, they took off and they left everything back home, and they settled in a new country with no one to help him, right? They didn't know anyone. I mean, they knew a few people, but they didn't have a community. They didn't have any money. And they just took the very few belongings that they had and they came to a new country. And so I started thinking about that. And I said, you know, if they were able to do that, and if they were courageous enough to embark in that journey of the unknown, what am I going to do? Right? This is a very unique opportunity. So I became aware of my very unique opportunity and where I was in that moment in my life and what it meant to be part of the United States. It's the land of opportunities, right? And you can do anything here if you work hard. Mm-hmm. Right? Yes. We all know that that's sort of a myth. And so I started exploring more and I was like, so I got to learn how to do this thing. And so the event that really pushed me to changing the path of my life was that I had a premature son. And so I was forced to leave my job of 11 years in customer service. And all of a sudden I had no job, right? And I felt like I was very vulnerable because it wasn't my choice. My plan was to stay there until retirement and just, you know, just work. That's what people do. And so I had this very unique opportunity to reevaluate and to think about, okay, what's next and what should I do? I'm facing this life decision. And what are you going to do, Olga? Right. So, I started to just think about the possibility of changing my life completely and going back to school. And once again, I would talk myself out of it and, you know, come up with this really complicated scenario and reasons why not to do it. And then the little angel inside my head would come and kind of have a debate with the devil in my head and they would, you know, try to come to an agreement, but the angel finally won. And so I enrolled in college and that was the beginning of everything. I wasn't going to go for a career. I wasn't planning on doing a bachelor's. I was just going to go and get a certificate. I was going to just get a short career, maybe 9 months, a year. And this was at a community college. And so it all started there. I started, it just embracing the possibility of continuing. And so everything finally fell into place and I ended up loving every moment of it. I ended up rediscovering myself and daring to dream, right? And because to me, it was a dream. And I felt the courage to do it because I was really afraid that I wasn't going to pass and that I wasn't learning material and so, or school material. And so, there was a lot of, self-growth that happened and I had to really believe in myself and gather the confidence from where I didn't have it, to be able to stay in school. And of course my family was supportive, right? But it was quite a journey because as most first generation students can relate, when you don't have any parents that have been through that journey, they don't know how to help you. And so they cannot explain, you know, how to navigate. And so you have to do that on your own and you have to be able to identify whenever there's a problem and be able to resolve it on your own. So sometimes how do you even begin to identify what the problem is, right? Because nobody's there to tell you. And so my father, I do have to say he has some college education, but he never completed. And so that was back in our home country in Mexico, which is totally different from the educational system here in the US. And so thank God for TRIO, because I feel like TRIO was the support system that I needed in school that totally understood where I was at. And they provided me with tutors and they provided me with the assistance and the tools to be able to graduate successfully. And so
all of those experiences,
long story.
No. They're all so relatable in regards to what we go through. And I want to just go back a little bit because, you know, our kids inspire us to do so much, you know, and I can only imagine the inspiration that you had at that time. Y las ganas, you know, and then just the pure fire of will of wanting to do something for your kiddos once you decided to go to school. I do want to ask, just for practicality's sake, maybe he says you graduated high school and then you said 11 years and I'm not sure where we're at. So how old were you when you decided to go back to college or to go to college? If I may ask.
Yes, that's okay. I get the age question quite a bit. I was over 30. And so, it was such a redefining moment. And I wasn't sure what I was doing. And I wasn't even sure if it was the right choice in that moment in time because I needed money. You know, you either have this dream and you try to make it work and you suffer financially, or you go and find a job. So I learned from the mujeres in my family, the women in my family. I learned resiliency, and I learned to have, as you mentioned, the fire and the courage. And I remember how my grandma did that for paternal grandma did that for throughout her life, right? She was very advanced for the times, especially in Mexico, a country where we know that it's there's machismo, let's call it like it is. And so women were not expected to do much, right, other than to take care of family. And so you know, she was a bookkeeper, an accountant for a local business in Guadalajara. And she knew how to do stenography, which is in Espanol, taquigrafía. And so I remember being so young and learning that my grandma knew how to write and compile an enormous amount of information in like in a little paragraph. And so to me, it was like, how do you even do it? It was so fascinating that I thought she was just amazing. I thought she was so smart and that she was amazing. And so that stayed in my mind. And so when you mentioned that, you know, I had the fire to go back, she was the person that I would think about, you know, my grandma. She was such an inspiration to me. And I do want to say that this conversation, in a way, is a tribute and an honor to her because she's 87 and she's very ill. And so as we speak, she's in the hospital and it might be that it would be her end of life. And so I'm hoping that it's not the case, but if it is, then I just want to say that I will forever have those memories and those lessons, those life lessons.
So one thing I want to do is call out her name, keep her name alive. What's your grandma's name?
Mi abuela se llama Delia Marrufo. This podcast, I would like to dedicate it to her.
Oh my goodness, mujer. You don't even understand. The beauty of grandmas with me is unattainable. It's priceless, you know, and I can only imagine. As we continue to talk about your experiences, it's interesting, you know, just revisiting what services helped you during college, you know, and really Trio Services. I know Trio Services because of I worked with community colleges before. So you graduated, you mentioned you weren't going to go for a bachelor's. Tell me a little bit more. So did you end up going for a bachelor's? The suspense.
Yes. I had a double major. I earned a double major in social work and sociology. And I even have a minor in Espanol and Latin American studies because I felt like I never had that opportunity to really learn how to read and write in Spanish to a degree that it would be considered professional. And so I really wanted to learn more about our history, and I wanted to learn everything about Spanish. And so I minored in Spanish.
And where did we get this degree at? Let's talk about your college.
Yeah, Briarcliff University in Sioux City, Iowa. I was fortunate enough to have a very supportive family. My husband was taking care of us during that time. And so I didn't have to work. And so, being in college and being with other students who couldn't have that luxury, I felt very fortunate and very happy to be able to do all of this with their support.
That's very cool. Okay. So what next? You know, like, where did you go? What happened?
So as soon as I graduated, I started working for Unity in Action right away. And so I did my internship and then my practicum, because I had to do both for my degrees. And I did them both at Unity in Action. I became really attached, I would say, to the organization early on, just because I believe so heavily on their mission and the power to reshape our community, because we've been in this community for more than 25 years. And I know so many of the people that live here and that have brought their families and that have established their life here. And so this became really, really a great opportunity for me to be able to contribute and to do more. And because my father was a community organizer in this area for years, I mean, that only felt natural for me, right? And so I knew a lot of the people that he had worked with, and he transferred on that social capita. It felt right for me, right? It was almost like meant to be. And so I have to tell you that my father was one of the founders for the Liga Latina soccer here in Siouxland. And I'm very proud to say that, because there was no such organization. It wasn't an organization. There was nothing like it in the area at that time. We're talking about the 90s. And so here you have a very small group of men wanting to play soccer because it's so much part of their identity, and getting organized and talking to people and trying to get funding from the city and trying to talk to the allies that they met throughout their journey, and finally being able to form the Liga Latina of Sioux City. And he was involved in that for many years. And, you know, as a child growing up with a busy parent, he was never home. I was quite resentful for a while. And later on, I understood that, you know, his work was so significant and he had such a great impact that I just admire everything that he did. And now a lot of the doors that have opened for me are from the people that he worked with. Oh, it is hija de Jose Galan. And so they're like happy to see me for some reason. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I forget que es mi papá. Y digo, pues sí, soy hija de él, pero people see him as the person who did all of this work. Right. And so, of course, to me, it's mi papá, pero that makes me really proud. And so I'm thankful for that.
That's so cool that your dad is a leader, you know, to this day, because, you know, that's how they know us, is that nuestros padres. And it's so cool that de que ahora conocen a su hija, and she's also kicking butt in South Sioux. And how soccer is such a big part of our culture and our identity, as much as, you know, it's so interesting. I don't watch it as much recently, but if I do, when I do, I am right in. Les digo a los niños, you know, be quiet. I'm trying to focus, you know, and then quien está, you know, taking on the field and who's doing good and who's not. And it's been very interesting. Y South Sioux just went to state, no? Were you all in
state? Yes.
See?
Yes. So I was the City Boys, the Cardinals. And it's so good that you mentioned that, because on Monday, we're going to present certificates to all the boys that went to state at the school board. And so it's not the first time that they've gone to state, but it is the first time that I have the honor of presenting certificates. And so I'm really looking forward to it on Monday because of what soccer has meant for our family and, you know, the history behind it around Siouxland. And so it'll be a very special moment.
That's awesome. What a cycle, what a circle just coming through.
Yes, full circle.
Because, you know, the parents of the kiddos probably play soccer at the soccer league, you know, in La Liga. And then you just know those little ones and then it just continues. I'm so excited. Congratulations, yes. South Sioux, for making it to state. Y luego you're going to be able to present on behalf of Unity in Action. Congratulations. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about where you are now. So you're currently with Unity in Action. You did your practicum. You did your internship. ¿Qué pasó? How did executive director come in the mix of it all?
Well, it came in as a need because when I came to Unity in Action, the organization was struggling in various aspects. And so I was fresh, you know, I had aspirations, professional aspirations, personal aspirations. And, you know, I thought I could do it. It's like, oh, let me just take it on. And so naive Olga, right? She had no idea what she was getting herself into. And so I stepped into this role of the executive director for a nonprofit with no experience, newly graduated. I had my education and my father's teaching of community organizing, and I knew the community, I knew the people, and I felt like that's all I needed to be able to do this work. And so Unity in Action is a Latino-led grassroots organization that has been in South Sioux City for 8 years now. And so I've been fortunate enough to come in and continue doing this work that was originally initiated by a group of leaders, local leaders that had a vision, right? That they wanted to do more for the Latino community, the immigrant and Latino community. And they did a great job and they did awesome work. And so at the time when I came in, it was a moment in time where, you know, I was fresh. I had new ideas. I had possibly new resources. And so it was just the perfect timing for me to come in and pretty much do what I'm doing now. It hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy to come in as a Latina female woman into an executive role because one, I'm Latina and I'm female. I don't think of myself as being young, but in comparison to a lot of the people that are in these positions, I'm the youngest one. And so oftentimes I have to prove myself because I'm young, Latina, and female. And so that's often the story that we are asked to prove ourselves. And in this moment, I think that I've done a lot of work that has provided that proof and that desire and that fire and the it's just the track record of what women can do in general, Latina women. And so I've been very fortunate, as I mentioned, to have the teachings of my father, and I go back to him for a lot of advice. But I've also called my grandma in some occasions, and even though she's in Mexico, she has a different type of experience and a different view of things. And so those two people are my inspiration. And plus, I have been surrounded by many mentors. Some of them are here in town. Others are scattered throughout the state and maybe in different states. And so even though I don't get an opportunity to talk to my mentors often, I feel like I can pick up the phone anytime and call them, and we can pick up where we left off. And so this really makes me happy. And I think that as Latina women, we need those networks, and we need that group support, because as we're doing this work in rural communities, we often feel lonely, right? And we're often questioning our decisions because we're alone. And so meeting so many women that are doing this grassroots work and collective organizing and working on it, on equity and inclusion and you know, everything that encompasses equity, I think it's provided us with a different type of community and a different type of sisterhood among Latina women. And so this is why I'm so excited that I got the invitation to this podcast, because I know what it means, what it has done for me. And I only hope, and I'm sure that by sharing our personal stories and by making ourselves vulnerable and putting our stories out there, it's only going to be for good. And it's only going to inspire more women. My hope is to inspire other Latinas who are going to be coming after us, otras mujeres que van a continuar con nuestro trabajo, that are going to continue this work. And they're going to pass it on to other women. And so we're building, even as we're doing this podcast in this such a one-on-one conversation, we're still kind of working, because we're building those women and we're saying, you know, aquí estamos, las escuchamos, and we're going to be here. We're going to be here for you if you need us. And so that was one of the biggest lessons that I learned in doing this work, is that I never came in with the idea of inspiring other people. I just kind of felt like I needed to do what was needed at the time in South Sioux City. But I was humbled to learn along the way that so many women would reach out to me on social media and other places. And they would reach out to me just to say, Olga, you're doing such a good job. I am so proud of you. Oh, Olga, you know, I admire you. And to me, those are big words to say, to tell someone, I admire you, or estoy orgullosa de ti. Like, it, to me, those are big words. So I'm very humbled to hear all of that and to receive all of those messages, because I never came into this work thinking about that. And so now I'm aware of that impact, and I'm aware that whatever I do, whatever I say is going to impact someone, and that gives me fire and that keeps me going. And so thank you for this space.
Yes. Well, I'm so happy to have you here. And it's so interesting because you and I have been in the same rooms, and it's so funny because I almost feel like we just bounce off of each other, you know, like, because there's so much frustration sometimes, you know, in regards to health equity, in regards to racism, in regards to our community just being hit, you know, once and over and y otra vez, you know, and we're at tables that we need to be able to say, okay, no, this is enough. And you all need to hear this. And I'm there with you, you know, porque you say, I almost feel like you say it so eloquently. Y yo lo digo tan enojada, you know, I'm just like, and you're like, yes, that's why, Gladys, this is why we should do da 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 da. I'm like, yes, Olga, what Olga said, but I'm also very upset. So it's very interesting having us in the same room, but we're both headed the same route. And I love having you in the room. I know that when we're in the room together, we're going to speak up. We're going to say what we need to say, and we're going to get things done. And even when we're alone, you know, we have to say what we need to say, to be able to speak up and be able to represent our communities, like you said, because every little step we're impacting, we're trying, we're attempting to make sure that our community doesn't continue to get those hits. And at the very least, not so hard, right? So, you know, courage, la palabra courage is instilled, or it begins with the word fear. And I think of you as a courageous mujer, but I also know that it encompasses fear. So let's talk a little bit about that. When, if you can share with us a story of when you have felt that fear, pero you spoke up anyways, or you showed up anyways, or you did it anyways. Can you share a story with us?
Yes, I think that there's quite a few instances, and being the executive director of a nonprofit grassroots, I think there was a lot of fear in me in coming in, a lot of expectations. And I was afraid. I was afraid of failing. And like, you know, we always have that fear. But once again, I found the courage to come in. But I think the times that I've been afraid, or I have had second thoughts about should I do this or not, has been on the issues of health equity, but also with the issues, just what it means in the whole topic of immigration. And so when is it the right time to speak? Who's my audience? And what's my purpose for saying this? Right? What do I want to accomplish by this? And you also have to find the right words so that you don't disconnect people, and so that people can stay engaged with you as you're talking about these complicated topics. But you know that they're so important, and being okay with making people uncomfortable. It doesn't come easy. And I have to remember and honor our my mentor, Frank Lemire, for saying these words, be okay with making people uncomfortable, because that's what we do. And if you're not making people uncomfortable, then you're not really doing your job, you know, as we're occupying this space. And so that doesn't come easy, because whenever you speak up and you talk about these issues, you might be singled out, and you probably will. And you may lose allies, you may lose partnerships, you may lose people along the way. But at the end of the day, I do think that if you know who you are, and if you know what your purpose is, you will do it every time, and you will feel afraid, but you will find the courage. Somehow it'll come from somewhere, out of nowhere sometimes, to just stand up and say something. And so thank you to Frank Lemire for instilling those words in me. And I always think about that as I'm coming into a room full of people where I know that I'm going to be looked at, and that I know that I'm probably going to be judged, and that I'm probably going to be dismissed as well. And so,
yeah. And we've been in a lot of those rooms, and as an executive director mm-hmm. in rural areas where, you know, we are the minority, quote unquote, we definitely are in those rooms on a constant basis. And I guess what fills your cup? And I, you know, we have so many times you mentioned before, labor intensive, cuando trabajabas en mi packing, you know, or when you worked for customer service, it was labor intensive, it was repetitive, but now you're in a whole nother capacity. But de todos modos, you know, you're tired at the end of the day, because these conversations, they are hard to have, right? So share a little bit about what fills your cup up.
I think that, having people, knowing that people can be heard, because oftentimes people know of the issues and they know about their life struggles, but they don't know what to do about it, right? And so I think what fills my cup is telling people that they can do something about it, and empowering them through resources, and having a system that we know it works in the long run, because this work takes a lot of time, but providing those resources now, so that they can be their own advocates for themselves and their families in the future, is really what makes me happy. And knowing that I'm contributing to that social change is really what keeps me going. And there's been times where I've asked myself so many times, you know, why do I keep on doing this? Why do I put myself in these positions? And, you know, especially when you don't see any results. But knowing that there's very few celebrations in this work, and just learning to celebrate the small victories is so important. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm celebrating the victory of a new phase for Unity in Action, a new opportunity, a new building. We just recently got funded through two new foundations. And so I'm in that moment. I'm celebrating and reflecting back. And as I look through our pictures on social media and just the history of Unity in Action, I'm just humbled to be here during this phase. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Very cool. Well, you know, in addition to courage, we've talked a little bit about that, those uncomfortable feelings, just trying to bring it all back together. And we've talked about why we're doing what we're doing. Why are we sitting here doing this interview? And it's for all of those Latinas that are feeling alone at this moment. Any thoughts that you want to share with them, inspirational pieces that you want to talk about? And, you know, when they're feeling on their dark days, that they don't even want to get up out of bed, ¿qué les dirías, Olga?
Yo les diría que tomen cada día con calma, one day at a time. You're not going to resolve the problems of the world, but if you can focus on one thing at a time, you will make an impact. No one expects us to solve the issues of the world, because it's impossible. And you know, sometimes we do think that, oh, it's my job to solve everything, and it's really not. Pero también les diría que you don't have to know everything to be in a leadership position. It doesn't matter where you are in life. Take a leap of faith and embark in your dreams. If it feels right, then it's right. Follow the energy. I'm a big fan of just intuition, and if it feels right, then I'm going in the right direction. And then also at the same time, paying attention to energy to guide you when you should put the brakes on. And so I'm getting better at recognizing those moments, but I would say the same to Latinas out there. Just do what you feel is right. The other thing that I would say is you don't have to speak perfect English to be active in your community. I have to say that primero pienso en español. Like, I first analyze and process information in Spanish. And so there's some days where I can't speak English. I wake up in the morning and I'm a total Mexican. And so no puedo hablar en inglés. And then there's times where no me sale bien el español. And so you can relate to code switching. I know you can. And so sometimes your brain just te juega juegos y ya hay días que no puedes hablar bien. So I've learned to embrace my Spanglish, y como me salga, that's how I'm going to communicate. And so I tell Latinas que they don't have to speak perfect English to be active in their community. I also want to tell them, to don't wait, go ahead and enroll in the program they've been thinking about. Go ahead and learn a new sport, a new hobby. I thought, you know, my time had passed when I was analyzing and contemplating the idea of going back to school, but in all reality, it's been a life-changing moment for me, a life-changing event. And so everything that has transpired ever since I got my degree has been so wonderful, and I've been learning on a constant basis since then. And I've been able to meet so many wonderful people, like some of my best friends and my colleagues that I admire and that I look up to are in this field. And so I'm grateful and very thankful for the opportunity of being able to go to college and to obtain a degree, because through this, I've been able to meet so many of my closest friends and colleagues.
So much for the youngins to take on, because perfection, te imaginas? We are always thinking about perfection. We're always thinking about our accent. We're always thinking about, am I white enough? Am I brown enough? You know, so am I enough, period. You know, and so I think all of those words, if the ones that the people that are listening, if you can take it all in and really embrace it and dissect it and analyze it and work through it, porque it's a lot of self-work, right? All of what you just shared. Yeah, it is. And we don't come at it easy. You know, you have two professional women right now at the mic, but that doesn't mean that we have it all together. And it is a work in progress. So I appreciate you, Olga. I know that people are going to be like, pues, I know Olga now, but how do I find her? So how can we get a hold of you? How do we how can we track you down and ask you interesting questions? Por si acaso, we have some.
Well, everybody's on social media, I hope. So on social media, Galán Guevara is my name on Facebook. And so oftentimes that's how people reach out to me. They send me a message on Facebook and then we can connect from there. And so for anyone that's in the South Sioux area, I am on 3900 Dakota Avenue in the Windsor Plaza. Vengan y visitenme, que I'm really happy to show off my office, and I've had quite a few visitors. And so me encantan las visitas como toda buena Latina.
Awesome. Y luego on Facebook, me imagino, Unity in Action. Follow their great work. I mean, you guys, you all have been working so hard for the past few years. And I am so happy, Olga, that you're in the executive director position. You're making so many moves for the organization. I can only imagine where you're headed. And I'm excited for your future. Any last words that you want to share with the state? Y tal vez, I don't know, we have some California listeners too. So we have Cali, in Colorado, other states. What do you want to share? Last words.
Yeah, shout out to Watsonville, California, which is my hometown. Hey. Si me escuchan, I grew up in Watsonville. And so same. I mean, a lot of the inspiration that I get from Courageous Mujeres, it's nationwide, right? People from California, from the East Coast, Texas, they're all over. There's so many of little Gladys is out there, little Olgas, and you name it. We're in this together. And I'm so glad that we're in this era of technology where distance is no longer a factor. You know, there's so many ways to talk to each other. And, you know, we can reach so many people through various ways. And this is amazing.
Awesome. Pues otra vez, bienvenida y gracias for sharing your story with us. Listen to Courageous Mujer podcast, and thank you again.
Muchísimas gracias. Thank you.
Courageous Mujer podcast is brought to you by United by Culture in Lexington, Nebraska. United by Culture celebrates our differences and lives by the saying, many nations, one family. Feel free to follow United by Culture on Instagram and Facebook. Again, you can find Courageous Mujer podcast at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Anchor. Feel free to catch the full episode on YouTube. While you're there, do not forget to like, subscribe, and comment. I'm your host, Gladys Godinez, y hasta la próxima.